The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we're taking you to North Carolina, where I want to introduce you to one of the worst Republican candidates since all the other really bad candidates in 2022. I'm talking about Mark Robinson. He was elected lieutenant governor of North Carolina in 2020, and this past March, he won the Republican primary for governor. Now, Republicans nominated a lot of bad candidates in 2022, like Blake Masters, the Senate candidate in Arizona, who thought the Unabomber had some good points. Herschel Walker, the Georgia Senate candidate, who played Russian roulette with a loaded firearm. And Doug Mastriano, the Pennsylvania gubernatorial candidate, who chartered buses to January 6th. But Mark Robinson looked at all of those things and said, "Hold my beer, guys." He called the Parkland High School shooting survivors media prostitutes, denied the Holocaust, called homosexuality filth, and called women who have abortions murderers. Donald Trump is on track to win North Carolina in November. He's currently leading by around 7 points in the 538 average, but Robinson is lagging well behind him. So we had to talk to some of the former Trump voters who are unwilling to vote for Robinson. My guest today is Zach Montalero, Deputy National Editor at Politico. Zach, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. In your recent reporting, you dove into counties where Trump has underperformed in the primaries, including one ex-urban county in North Carolina, Transylvania County. It's an interesting one, where Nikki Haley got 31% of the vote. For comparison, she got 23% of the vote statewide. So in the course of your reporting, what did you learn about how Democrats hope to reach those kind of voters, particularly in North Carolina?
Yeah, so this is the million-dollar question, I guess, for the Republican voters who have shown over and over again that despite the last 8 years, they still don't consider themselves Trump Republicans. It's, can Democrats reach them? I think mostly everybody, Republicans, both pro and anti-Trump, and Democrats, expect most of those voters to pull the lever for Donald Trump in the fall. That's a pretty well-documented phenomena that even if you have your problems in the primary, folks come back home. The big question is Donald Trump different? A little that is probably yes, that there are some protest Republican votes who aren't going to go back to Trump, especially after the last 8 years. And can Democrats actually reach them? You know, up until fairly recently, there's been no real effort by either Trump or the Democratic Party to reach those anti-Trump Republican voters. We've seen that change a little bit more recently. Former president's campaign is trying to explicitly reach out to Haley voters saying, look, Donald Trump doesn't want you. We want you. There's, you know, small super PAC efforts trying to get these voters to say, look, you may not like Joe Biden, but he's better than the other guy. But I still think right now the success, if it happens, is going to be on the margins. We just have so much history of these voters not switching over that it's kind of tough to see what they're going to do in a couple months.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, I focus on these voters as well. And for me, when you say margins, that's the right word, right? That there are some of these people that you can persuade. And in places like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan, maybe even Arizona, where the margins are so tight, moving those voters really matters. And that's how Joe Biden was able to put together a big enough anti-Trump coalition to swing those states back in his column in 2020. I do think Democrats chase North Carolina. Like, it is never on my list of places that I want to play. But what's interesting this time is they look at what happened in Pennsylvania, right, with a guy like Doug Mastriano and another Josh running for governor. Josh Shapiro is able to not only defeat Mastriano by huge margins, but also help pick up that Senate seat for John Fetterman. Now, Fetterman had his own brand. Pennsylvania is a much easier state, I think, for Democrats to move things in their direction with the right kind of candidates. But do you think North Carolina is fool's gold for Democrats? Or do you think because of Robinson's unique, liabilities, it's in play?
I think it depends on what race you're talking about.
Well, presidential.
Presidential. I remember back in 2020, you know, everyone's being like, surely this is the year Democrats get North Carolina. And then they won Georgia, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's been so many races for Democrats that have come so freaking close on the federal level in North Carolina. It's not just a presidential race. You know, the most recent Senate race there was also kind of a nail biter. And national Democrats, they didn't write it off, but they, you know, said their money was worth more elsewhere. You know, the president remains unpopular. He remains unpopular in North Carolina. He remains unpopular nationally. I think we're still seeing that balancing act. The people look fondly back on Donald Trump's presidency, you know, after 4 years of being removed from kind of the daily chaos of his presidency, that every day was a new story. Do people look back fondly? Combined with like North Carolina's demographics are only getting better for Democrats. You know, the growth in North Carolina is in those urban areas. It's folks moving to cities and gentrifying parts of these cities, and the growth of, you know, universities in the area that are driving the growth of the state. So sure, like, you know, North Carolina has been Democrats' hope since 2008, since, you know, Barack Obama did so well there. And everyone's like, surely this is the state of the future in the South. And it just hasn't lived up to that for Democrats. But everything is trending in the right direction, even if it's not going to be this year for them.
Okay. Well, look, I want to dive into this governor's race in earnest. Mark Robinson was able to win the primary with 65% of the vote because he became a bit of a celebrity among Republican voters. And we'll get to the more Robinson skeptical voters in a bit. But for this show, we also convened a group of two-time Trump voters to level set how standard issue GOP voters are thinking about this race. Let's listen.
The first time I heard Mark was probably at county convention a couple years back, and I was awestruck by his speech. It hit all the right notes. He's a great speaker. He knows how to get a crowd riled up. And at the time, I was like, man, this guy should be like on the ballot for running for vice president of the United States. My concerns about it is that I heard from several of the other council state members that he doesn't show up to a lot of the stuff that he's supposed to be doing at the state level and isn't actually fully doing the job of lieutenant governor right now. And I'm also a little bit concerned about some things that I've heard of business dealings and his background and stuff that I think the Democrats are going to use yet this fall. So I was hesitant as to whether he could actually win this fall. Having said that, as I said earlier, I will always vote for Republicans, so I will vote for him, and I will campaign, and I will go knock doors and do whatever it takes to get him elected this fall. He's controversial, of course, but the reality is that with a lot of these things, we could run the most moderate Republican that there is in the books, and the media would make them look like a extremist.
I think I like him because I know a lot of anti-Semitism has been marked on him. Like, I don't think he's against any Jews, or they said something about Nazi I saw. And I saw something about his financial, like him and his wife, and there's like some discrepancy there about how money has been spent. But I think overall, I think he would be a great person to govern North Carolina.
When I first saw him, this was a few years ago, and he spoke against our city council here about gun control. And he gave a wonderful speech that day. And I know what it's like to deal with our city council here, and it's not fun. So I could relate to him speaking out. I've also watched him speak at some different events, and I feel like his values are aligned with mine. I also feel that his presence and his way of presenting himself, I think he could have a great future. I, on the other hand, have been hearing a lot of people say eventually he could run for president down the road. Church. There's videos out there of his church and pastor and him speaking. And he's strong. He presents himself as a strong-willed person. And I think that's good because we need somebody with that kind of backbone.
The first time he came on my radar, I think he was talking about the Second Amendment somewhere. And I watched it, I don't know how many times, showed people. He was a great speaker. Obviously got me motivated and shared a lot of the same values.
Whenever you hear Mark speak, he's very passionate and very articulate. But, you know, if you compare him to even like Trump, when he gets on there and he kind of says the same couple of words and he kind of stumbles along. Joe Biden, he mumbles along. You can't even understand what he's saying. But with Mark, he's very clear. He's very passionate about his topics. He's a Christian man. He portrays Christian values. And he ties that in with politics. A lot of people try to separate politics away from what they call religion. But that's what our country was founded upon, was a belief in God. And I like the fact that Mark doesn't try to push that aside or downplay that. He brings it right up front. And that's why I would support him as governor. And hopefully maybe one of these days president. Who knows?
Okay. Big praise for Mark Robinson from the base of the Republican Party in North Carolina. Now, what was interesting when I was watching this group, I was like, man, a lot of people heard this speech about guns. That's interesting to have so many people reference the same speech. And it was at this Greensboro City Council meeting in 2018. It went viral in conservative media. And then after that, that's when he ran for lieutenant governor in 2020. I want to just play quickly part of that speech.
It seems like every time we have one of these shootings, nobody wants to put the blame where it goes, which is at the shooter's feet. You want to put it at my feet. You want to turn around and restrict my right, constitutional right that's spelled out in black and white. You want to restrict my right to buy a firearm and protect myself from some of the very people you're talking about in here tonight. It's ridiculous. I don't think Rod Serling could come up with a better script. The bottom line is when that Second Amendment was written, whether the framers liked it or not, they wrote it for everybody. And I am everybody. And the law-abiding citizens of this city are everybody. And we want our rights, and we want to keep our rights. And by God, we're going to keep them, come hell or high water.
So that is what made Mark Robinson sort of famous on the right. You know, Zach, one of the things I talk about a lot as I do all these focus groups is how the gap is getting bigger between what base voters in the Republican Party want and what swing voters will tolerate. And it seems like, I can hear it, that is red meat for the right in North Carolina. And I know you've sat through the last few election cycles. Where would you put Robinson on the spectrum of, I don't know if I'd call them unelectable MAGA candidates, but I guess I would say ones that live on the other side of that gap, right? Where they sort of can't transition over for the swing voters. Like, is he like Doug Mastriano, Blake Masters, Herschel Walker? Where would you put him in that spectrum?
Yeah, he certainly, at least, you know, rhetorically and certainly in the past, close to Doug Mastriano and the like. But I think what sets him apart is that he's actually a good politician in a way that like Doug Mastriano is not.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Robinson, his campaign this year, is trying his best to not talk about these things that, you know, have filled up every single newspaper in North Carolina, of his laundry list of scandals and, you know, outrageous statements he's made in the past. Mark Robinson is just a good politician. He's good at working with grassroots groups. He's a great public speaker that if you, for a moment, and you obviously cannot do this in the actual election, but if for a moment you set aside all the outrageous things he said, he would be like the perfect candidate. But you can't set aside those outrageous things. And Mark Robinson, in his fairly short time in like public life and pre-public life, has said like among the more damning things like that you've seen out there. So it's hard to balance those two, right? Like, he's not Doug Mastriano because he's not off-putting and weird on the stump. But he also has this list of scandals and statements that in a pre-Trump era would get nowhere near public office and you know, in pre-2016.
And this is, to me, the thing that when I think about Republican primaries now, like you just nailed exactly what it is. And that's what I mean about the gap, is that this guy would not get through a Republican primary. Like, there would be a party apparatus there, or the voters would be like, I'm sorry, the Holocaust didn't happen? I think not. I think we'll pass. And now that guy dominated the Republican primary. And, you know, you hear folks in that sort of first set of sound saying things like, well, I don't think he's anti-Semitic. And they basically have just decided, media is making a big deal out of this stuff. You know, a lot of the way that folks sort of brush aside a lot of the things that Trump says, you know, they're applying that to him. And so he dominates in a Republican primary, but is really going to struggle in a general election. And look, Trump carried North Carolina with 49.9% of the vote. But Robinson's poll numbers have been consistently in the low 40s. Like, he is not getting up to that 49%. And so that suggests that there's a meaningful number of former Trump voters, and I don't mean former like they're out on Trump. I mean people who voted for Trump twice, who aren't going to vote for Robinson. So the first group we convened were two-time Trump voters who liked Robinson, like base voters. Then we also convened a group of 2020 Trump voters who did not like Robinson, and I want to play how they were thinking about him.
When I heard that he thought the Holocaust was fake, I mean, I was just blown away, because how can anybody believe that? And then he just says a lot of things that just are not true. I live in Asheville, and you know, we have a lot of the LGBT, I could lose all of the letters in there. I mean, he wouldn't like our town at all.
I know he is an anti-Semitic. I know that he believes that the Holocaust never happened. He is a big, ridiculous conspiracy theorist. He leans heavily on stuff that just doesn't even correlate with what he's trying to do with our state. Mm-hmm. He's very unfriendly to the LGBT community on a whole. He's very Christian and he wants to follow that. You got to separate that crap. You got to stop. Okay. Whatever you believe in here in your religion, that doesn't mean you impose it on us. Mm-hmm. Okay. He's also part of that group on an underground called the Black Israelites. Mm-hmm. That's something to look up. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what it is, I'm not going to get into that right now. Mm-hmm. You feel they're the chosen ones first.
When I begin to do research and see that he thinks possibly the Holocaust was a fake and says he wants to be instrumental for civil rights, I'm thinking, okay, wait a second. This is an oxymoron. You know what I mean? That's like saying I want to go up and go down at the same time.
I'm really glad that I was involved with this group, because I'm very glad to know about Mark Robinson and his thoughts. So I can definitely, you know, count him out in November.
It seems like he has a superiority complex, I would say, that maybe it's a holier than thou or better than attitude. And honestly, for me, I really feel like we need to have grassroots leaders. We don't need these political figureheads that are out for their own agendas. We need the potholes on the road fixed. You know, we need regular everyday things. I do not see him as the kind of candidate that would be even interested in looking at that. He seems like he's very agenda-based and very politicized on everything he says.
I used to be not a big donor, but a donor to Wake County Republican and the state of North Carolina Republican. And I keep getting text messages that my membership has expired. And I keep sending them messages that I will not give them a penny as long as Robinson is on the ballot.
And I'll just add to that that Governor Roy Cooper, who's a relatively popular Democrat in North Carolina, didn't run for the U.S. Senate in 2022, in part because he didn't want to leave Robinson in charge of the state. That's how freaked out he was by Robinson. So, Zach, from your reporting, what is Robinson's relationship to the institutional GOP? Because one of the things that's interesting to me about this race is that the Republican Governors Association is supporting Robinson, whereas with Mastriano, they kind of left him out to dry, I think is how you put it in your reporting. Why are they supporting this guy?
Yeah, I mean, that was the interesting part. In like 2022, you know, Republicans had a much wider field of governor's races. And frankly, they did pretty poorly in 2022 in battle on governor's races, but they cut Doug Mastriano off almost immediately after he won the primary. The statement from the committee at the time was something along the lines, and I'm butchering the exact wording, but the idea was, we'll invest where races are competitive. So the implication was Pennsylvania is not. There's less governor's races this year, certainly. And North Carolina is a better territory for Republicans than Pennsylvania was for governor's races, at least That's the estimation. But there was not an effort to stop Robinson by the so-called like establishment Republicans. There was an attempt in the primary. He had a business conservative running against him, Bill Graham, who had the endorsement of Tom Tillis, the state senior senator. And Bill Graham spent millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars trying to knock Mark Robinson down, running ads that, like, frankly, Democrats could get cut off the paid for at the end and put their own paid for on. And you really wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the two kind of attack ads, talking about how Robinson's talked about Israel and women and all these things, and spent millions of his own money, had the senior senator endorsement, and it went absolutely nowhere. So, like, establishment Republicans just basically at this point is that if you can't beat Robinson, join him. You know, it's not a full-throated endorsement, certainly in the way that, you know, if Doug Ducey, you know, was reanimated and running in North Carolina would get. But if you can't beat him, basically join him and hope that the state's favorables can carry him over the finish line. The challenge with that is that North Carolina, yes, it's a Republican state federally, or at least swing state Republican leaning, has elected a heck of a lot of Democratic governors and attorneys general. But I guess the calculation is different than in Pennsylvania and in 2022, when they had so many battlegrounds that needed to fight it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that struck me about the group of people who were Trump voters, and it was just an accident, but they were all women. They were Trump voters, totally still like Trump, fine, but were just like hard nose on Robinson. And then somebody said this when they were talking about Josh Stein. Well, I hope he's fine, because we're definitely voting for him, because we're not going to vote for Mark Robinson because he's a lunatic. Well, the other thing super interesting is just how much the Holocaust denialism broke through. Is that because of the money that got put into that by his primary challenger? Or because everyone seemed to know that in the group off the top?
That was probably the leading anti-Robinson message in the Republican primary. And again, it all came from his primary challenger. But that when that primary challenger is spending millions and millions of dollars to kind of air this message repeatedly, it's going to stick in with voters. Democrats have not yet launched, you know, that massive advertising spending barrage that they have promised in North Carolina. But the early signs show that, like, that's the direction that they're going to be swimming in as well. And I think there'll probably be more of an abortion focus as well from Democrats. But they saw what Graham did, and it didn't hurt him with primary voters, or at least not enough to lose the nomination. But, like, stuff like that apparently, you know, sticks in the mind of North Carolina voters. Again, like, generic R versus generic D in North Carolina, I think folks would be predisposed to assume the Republican's going to win. For the governor's race, I don't think that's necessarily true. North Carolina voters have mostly elected Democratic governors for decades at this point.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
One reason this race is going to attract a lot of attention is abortion. Republicans control the North Carolina legislature, but not the governorship currently. So while there are already some abortion restrictions on the books, if Republicans retake the governor's mansion, that's the last step necessary to pass a near total ban like we've seen in other red states. That did not seem like what the down on Robinson voters we talked to were looking for. Let's listen.
Again, I'm a nurse. And I have walked the road in my career. I also worked with pregnant women. And I have walked that road very closely with lots of pregnant women. And while I am a Christian and I believe in life, but there are situations where I believe a woman needs to have that opportunity to make that choice. There's just too many options, too many things to consider. You just can't say it's always got to be this way, because there are so many different exceptions to things.
I don't necessarily want to see total bans, because I do feel like that's dangerous.
I struggle with that because at my heart, as a, you know, a Christian says, hey, every life is important. But I also do understand sometimes if the life of the mom is at risk, we understand that there's conditions, incest, rape, terrible, terrible conditions. Those aren't, you know, things of that nature. So it is difficult. So I feel like from a political scale, I don't feel like we can govern or legalize something that is really a moral issue.
It's not as easy to just go into another state and have an abortion like people think. It's not that easy, and you have no option now. What if there's something wrong and they've already seen it, and you know you're going to have a child that's going to come into the world that's going to need complete medical care, and that child's quality of life is not going to be right.
So WUNC there in North Carolina has reported that Planned Parenthood is organizing a major investment in this race. North Carolina currently has a 12-week abortion ban on the books, which passed because the heavily Republican legislature overrode Democratic Governor Roy Cooper's veto. Now, Mark Robinson has made it clear that he'd like at least 6 weeks of an abortion ban. And so I got to tell you, man, every time we ask a group of women, and this was an accident that it ended up with all women, about abortion, even those who lean conservative and vote for Trump, these are the kinds of responses you get. You know, there's like a woman in the group who said this line that the first time I heard it, I was like, really? And now it's in every group. Everybody always says some version of, I'm pro-life, but I believe in a woman's right to choose. That's just like a very standard position. So how do you think the GOP is going to navigate its unpopular position on abortion going forward? And why have some of the GOP governors, I continue to wonder this, because for a bunch of Republicans, it really tanks them in their state. Then there's other states like Georgia with Kemp, or in Ohio with DeWine, or in Texas. Like, it just doesn't have much impact on the governor's races. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the confounded question in governor's races. In 22, Democratic challengers and incumbents and open seat candidates ran on abortion rights across the country in all these governor's races. Michigan with Governor Whitmer, and in Arizona with now Governor Katie Hobbs, and in Pennsylvania with now Governor Josh Shapiro. And they won, and they won basically uniformly, except for when there was popular incumbent Republican governors, right? When they have a brand like a Brian Kemp, I guess a post or a pre-Dobbs brand for a politician is incredibly important when you're a Brian Kemp or a Mike DeWine. You know, Georgians know who Brian Kemp is. Ohioans certainly know who Mike DeWine is, who's been a politician and working in the state forever. They have a pre-built brand. That seemed to be the key. And I've struggled with seeing how much, you know, balancing what Laura Kelly, the Democratic governor of Kansas, did on abortion in 2022, which was almost nothing. She won, but she didn't really talk about abortion, which was an outlier, versus in 2023, Democratic Governor Andy Beshear of Kentucky, a state redder than Kansas, redder than North Carolina, certainly, talked about abortion in his reelection and won. So it seems that most Democrats are pointing in that direction, or at least talking about abortion rights in some way, shape, or form, and Republicans just don't have a good answer. The only one I've seen, at least publicly, trying to grapple with it in a non-federal race, I'll say, was Governor Youngkin in Virginia in 2023. He himself was not on the ballot, but the controlled state legislature was. And there was a real shot that Republicans would have won majority control of both chambers. Democrats won both chambers in Virginia, and I think folks maybe take away the wrong message from that, in that, yes, Democrats won in a blue state, but it's actually pretty freaking close. And it was still unambiguously a defeat for Glenn Youngkin, but like it was pretty freaking close, like, you know, a couple thousand votes in another direction. There was a, would have been a red Virginia. And he and Republicans in Virginia have been the only kind of party that's really tried to grapple with how do we talk about abortion in the post-Dobbs era. Don't see Robinson do it. You didn't see any of these Republican gubernatorial candidates in 22 do it. And it just remains this anchor around the neck of Republican statewide candidates. Federal, it appears to be that way, but at least in state races where these governors and these state legislatures are now actually setting the policy, if you don't have that pre-existing brand, if you're not Brian Kemp, if you're not Mike DeWine, it's just brutal to Republicans, and they've had no answer.
You know, this is such a great point, though, about it's not just pre-Dobbs, it's also if you existed pre-Trump. Because these guys are navigating all kinds of things, right? They're navigating now the repeal of Roe. They're also navigating a much Trumpier Republican electorate, right? And that's hard for a guy like Mike DeWine, who actually is more moderate, and who, if you talk to, I did this in Ohio, base voters in Ohio, a lot of them will, you know, at Mike DeWine. But he's got a big enough brand, he's been around long enough that he can withstand sort of how Trumpy the Republican Party has gotten. Whereas trying to think of another, maybe Hogan getting through his Republican primary. In most other situations, most sort of normie Republicans can't get through a Republican primary anymore. You have to have that pre-existing brand. If you try to run newly as a moderate Republican or a non-moderate, what a meaningless word now in the Trump era, but like a non-MAGA Republican or somebody who has had differences with Trump and spoken about them like Kemp has, now you can't get through the primary. But some of these people who predated him can. I think that's 100% right.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Okay, I want to also just listen to how this group talked about Josh Stein, the Democratic nominee and current attorney general. It was pretty clear this group that they weren't that into Stein, but they kind of saw him as their only choice. Let's listen.
A couple nights ago, my husband and I were talking about something came up about Mark Robinson. And I said, you know, I really don't know anything about Josh Stein. And my husband's like, well, we know that we're going to have to vote for him because we can't vote for Mark Robinson. And I was like, okay. You know, so I honestly, you know, and I'm thinking, why do I even bother to look up about him? Because he's got to be better than Mark Robinson. You know, I don't know.
He's definitely better than Mark Robinson by far. I mean, he's also the first Jewish, he's the first one that was elected into North Carolina in 2017. All around, he's just much more level-headed. And I think that's why Robinson was saying all this anti-Semitic stuff too, just to rile him up or rile people up.
I like the fact that he has progressive ideas about being proactive and not reactive. I don't like his gun control views. And I know most liberal Democrats have their thing about gun control, but I guess I just have a mindset that, again, it's not something that you're always going to be able to legalize because people buying legal guns are typically not the ones that are out here mass murdering people. I have a legal gun and I've never done one mass shooting in my entire life. So I don't like some of the views that he has, and he leans too extreme to one end.
I don't think we have a choice because we're not going to vote for Robinson.
Robinson.
Only choice. I think he's a very liberal Democrat. I think he has a good record for the positions that he's been in. I think that we've known that he's going to run this race for a long, long time, and there's no other choice. I mean, we don't have another choice. So We just have to hope for the best.
You know, Zach, one of the things that I was struck by in this group is I listen to so many groups, and I listen to so many groups of Trump voters. But if you hadn't told me these were two-time Trump voters, I might have thought it was a liberal group. Like a little bit in the abortion part, you heard some people sort of identify as conservatives, and you heard people in here say, yeah, you know, maybe he's a little bit more progressive for me. But also the part where they were like, he's anti-LGBTQ people, like they couldn't quite get all the letters in, but like one was from Asheville. And so they are this brand of sort of culturally conservative, raised in North and South Carolina, raised in the South, and they are all going to vote for Trump. These voters were still going to vote for Trump, but they were totally anti-Robinson. And it's interesting that for a lot of us in national politics, for me, I think of Trump as being a very extreme candidate. But they don't, right? They think that Trump is kind of like businessman, socially moderate, and that this guy, Robinson, is an outlier nut who is much more conservative than Trump, much more of a threat than Trump. And like, they're totally willing to vote for a Democrat locally. What do you make of this contrast where this type of voter, they're totally willing to vote for the Democrat over him, but also like they're going to vote for Trump?
Yeah, I guess it like harkens back to me, like the pre-ish Trump scandal in North Carolina, the last big one that sunk the last Republican governor, was about bathroom usage in 2016. And I might get the details a little bit wrong, but I believe the law barred...
It was the first bathroom bill. I remember, yeah.
Yeah, and that sunk the Republican governor there. So, you know, closer to the ground, closer at home, people vote differently than they will for president. My former editor used to always joke with me that in every story I read about governor's races, I'd write like governor's races are like the last bastion of ticket splitting. And that's definitely true in North Carolina, but that's true kind of everywhere that people, you know, think about on the other side of the coin, Charlie Baker in Massachusetts, you know, we have people who would rather die than vote for the Republican nominee for president, happily voting for Charlie Baker a couple times, or Phil Scott, the most popular governor in the country, is the state that elects a, you know, Democratic socialist to Congress, and Bernie Sanders also elects a Republican governor. Governors are just different in that people are more than willing to pull the lever for the opposite party, that you can get people who vote for Donald Trump twice and also vote for Roy Cooper, who is pretty popular in North Carolina. You can get people who vote for Joe Biden, who will vote for Phil Scott later this year in Vermont. Governors just kind of figured out a way to distinguish themselves. And, you know, why voters do that, I think, remains the mystery, and why governors haven't nationalized in the way that your, you know, congressional race nationalizes even, you know, further down the ballot. But something about governors have allowed governors of both parties to be able to create some degree of separation from their national brand, that you can still get a universe where there is a Larry Hogan or a Charlie Baker.
So that's a perfectly good answer. I think it's the right answer. There is just something about Trump. Trump is an extreme candidate. Like, it is weird to me that a bunch of these very sensible people who, like, look at Robinson and think, like, this guy's unacceptable. He behaves nuts. I don't like his position on abortion. But they're, like, fine with Trump. They don't see Trump as extreme. And I just want to dig on that just a smidge, because it does, to me, get it something that I think people being maybe like the DC or national political folks don't always get about Trump, which is that Trump reads to voters very much as a cultural moderate. Now, I know I said this already, but I just want to dig in on this point, because I think this particular race emphasizes it so clearly, where they see Trump as not racist often, even though he calls Joe Biden Genocide Joe at one of his rallies. What does that mean? If he's Genocide Joe, is that because he's helping Israel? None of that will stick to Trump. Now, granted, of course, he's not a Holocaust denier the way this guy is. But Trump has said so many offensive things about women, has had so many extreme views on foreign policy. He says racist things. But I think it is that this idea of Trump, well, people say this in the groups all the time about abortion. They do not think that Trump is like Mike Pence on abortion. It's funny how his lack of actual moral commitment allows him grace from voters who want a more moderate temperament on these social issues. Because he's like, well, yeah, I repealed Roe, but I'm leaving it to the states. And voters will say, like, Trump kind of probably paid for an abortion. They don't believe for one second he would take a zealot's view of trying to ban abortion. Whereas with Mark Robinson, they think he would take a zealot's view. And so Trump gets this leeway for both speaking out of both sides of his mouth, but also from the long relationship that people have with him, where they think, like, yeah, this guy's not Mike Pence on abortion or on gay stuff. Like, you know, the woman who lives in Asheville and wants a candidate who's not going to, like, attack gay people, even though Trump does. I mean, Trump has a whole bit he does in all of his speeches where he makes fun of trans people. He's, like, really amped up his anti-trans things. You know, he's picked up some of the woke stuff, but he's just been a New York kind of liberal for so long, waving that rainbow flag back in 2016, that nobody views him as somebody who is going to be socially conservative. And that helps him a great deal with this tranche of voters. Is that right? Do you think I'm getting that right?
If I had the answer for why Donald Trump has, you know, Teflon Don, right, that things that would stick to any other politician would sink that, which doesn't even sink him, I'd sell out in a book and be very, you know, wealthy. But, you know, I think the difference between a Donald Trump and any politician is that, like, people had an image of Donald Trump in their heads well before he came down the golden escalator in 2016, in a way that a Mark Robinson or any politician, any politician, you think about them first as a politician, first as your governor. I still, even after 8 years, you know, I've talked to voters who still don't think as Donald Trump first as a politician. They think of him as the apprentice. And that's just like not replicable, right? Like we don't see celebrity candidates all that much nowadays. Like what was the last governor celebrity candidate? Arnold Schwarzenegger? Donald Trump was incredibly famous before his presidency. You're not going to get an incredibly famous guy running for governor or Senate or whatever at this point in American politics.
Herschel Walker.
Herschel Walker. That's true. Yeah. And it stuck to Herschel Walker. So who knows? But, you know, Donald Trump, things just don't stick to Donald Trump in the way that we have seen has been not replicable anywhere else, basically.
Yeah, there's no doubt that it's true. Okay, Zach Montalaro, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Focus Group podcast. And thanks to all of you for joining us again this week. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. And you can also subscribe to The Bulwark on YouTube. And we will see you next week.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All of mine shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call pound 250 and say keyword CARE. That's CARE to pound 250.